Greetings, shopmates, and welcome to Tinkering Bells, a show about DIY, design, and all things hands-on. The sky's the limit as we talk props, metalwork, cosplay, woodwork, leather, electronics, and so much more. I'm Tamara Robertson, your host, so strap on your tool belts because we're about to get into some skill sharing, y'all. Today, I'm going to be joined by a maker who is so much more. She's a PhD engineer, a NOAA and NASA collaborator, and a science expert on TV. I don't want to give away too much, but this maker spends her free time working as a whisperer to large roaring animals. Yep, you heard that right. Large roaring animals. So if that doesn't make you want to stick around and hear more, then you might be at the wrong podcast. But first, let's go ahead and have our tech talk of the day. So we're going to be talking about a wide array of things with today's maker, including the many uses she has found for her Dremel. So let's back it up. Where did the Dremel get its start? Well, in 1932, Albert J. Dremel founded the Dremel Company, an American power tools company focused on home improvement and hobby applications. Dremel himself was an Austrian-born immigrant turned American inventor with 55 patents to his name. And they cover a wide range of inventions, including an electric fish scaler, a device to monitor chicken egg production, the first walk-behind rotary lawnmower, and of course, the Dremel tools that you know and love today. Now, the first product that was released within the company was an electric razor blade sharpener. But obviously, with time, disposable blades became a thing, and that product no longer was. Which is why now, today, the best products that they are known for is their line of high-speed, lightweight rotary tools, aka the Dremel Multi-Tools. Now, they currently produce 6 different rotary tools with over 30 different designs. And their uses range from carving to engraving, routing to grinding, sharpening to cleaning, polishing, cutting, and of course, sanding. Talk about a versatile tool, right? Now, some of the cool, intriguing applications, though, that these rotary tools have been used for historically include when the Defense Department used them in the development of the first atomic bomb. Military doctors in the field will actually also use them to reduce scar tissue around battle wounds. Dentists use them to craft dentures. Tattoo artists use them. There are just so many intriguing applications. It's no wonder that in 2013, the company estimated that there were more than 17 million of these tools in use worldwide. Well, that's it for your tech talk. As always, you can join in on the conversation with my maker friends and me on the Tinkering Bells Instagram and Twitter pages. Just search for Bell's Tinkering, hit follow, and share your DIY adventures together with us. Have a tool you want to learn about? Let me know, and it may be featured in a future episode. Tell us what you liked, what you hated, or possibly even what we missed. So now we're going to be getting into the main event, and I am so excited to introduce you to our next maker and one of my closest friends, Dr. Tracy Venara, drum roll. I should have done the drum roll and then announced. Let's do that again. Drum roll, please. Dr. Tracy Venara. So, how are you?
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast, Tamara.
Yay, I'm excited. So, as you know, this is a baby podcast. So, you know, it's we're crawling. We might be more of doing, you know, that baby thing where they roll around on their belly and they kind of flop like a Superman, but they don't do much. We're kind of that. We're drooling. And by we, I mean myself and all the other personalities. But yeah, are you ready? Let's start it off by telling everyone, like, where can they find you, follow you? Not in a creepy way, guys. Do not go to Florida. Do not stalk Tracy. But, like, where can they find you in a non-weird way? And, you know, what might they see if they go there?
They can find me at Inspector Planet on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Right now, I'm at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and we're all working remotely because of COVID. So if you're going to find me, you'd kind of have to stalk my house. But I do a lot of things outside this room as well, which, you know, if you're in South Florida and you work with any kind of animal, it's likely that I'll be there.
So again, we do not condone stalking Tracy's house. Instead, if you also work with animals, reach out to her and you guys can do some fun collabs and then we can all watch it and enjoy it. One of my favorite videos of you is this, is it a sea lion? It's like eating your head. Can you explain what it is you actually do for a living and why you get to have weird animals kiss your head?
That's a really good question. And that's not what I do for a living. I was hosting a kids show with animals and it was called Animal Outtakes. And that sea lion, like, dude, I've never seen an animal like that. Like, I worked with sea lions. Like, that's how I realized I didn't want to be a marine biologist because I didn't want to spend my life cleaning up sea lion snot from the walls of the aquarium.
That's not sexy to you? You don't enjoy that?
No. Well, yeah. And then it was the penguins, really, because, you know, you think penguins are all cute and it turns out that they are disgusting animals. They just they roll in the poop and they don't care. They do not care at all. But this sea lion was humongous and I've never seen a sea lion or heard a sea lion roar. And when I tell you, it sounded just like a lion. Like, I never understood why it was called the sea lion. I figured it was because of the mane. But when you hear a sea lion roar, you're like, holy crap, how the heck are they more related to bears? Which they are.
Huh.
Yeah, weird stuff. But this kid's show allowed me to learn all this stuff about animals. I don't do it. I'm an engineer, actually. So I worked as a project engineer and designing water, wastewater, stormwater, and land development projects all over the world, which was really cool. But, you know, it was just, there wasn't enough. This is going to sound crazy because I was an engineer, but there wasn't enough creativity. Everything was done the exact same way for every project, no matter where it was. Like, it blew my mind, except for the project in Saudi Arabia. That's another story because they had no regulations, but there was no creativity. I tried to do sustainable design, something aesthetic, something creative with the landscape architects, but nothing, you know, that it was just not. It was just very much frowned upon because developers knew how much it was going to be and how long it was going to take. So I went back to school to prove that there was a better way to approach land development and engineering design. I didn't start building until I was program manager of a research program at Mo Marine Laboratory in Sarasota, Florida. And it was a nonprofit, very little money. And I started to realize that building things allowed me to get things done that I wouldn't have because I didn't have the funding to be able to build things that weren't funded. I started realizing that, you know, there are no limits in life. Like, you can literally build the world that you want to see. So I brought that into my interns and it was just so much fun. Now I run US modeling for NOAA and it's a very different job. I'm really adulting now. Like, these decisions that we're making, I mean, they're sustaining life as we know it and the quality of life for years to come. So it's like super responsibility. So outside of work, I try to do as many cool, fun things as possible and build as much as possible to solve solutions in people's everyday lives, basically.
That's really cool. And we also have a really fun outreach comic.
Yes.
Science. Like, as if you didn't have enough things to do, you're also a superhero.
Yeah, we have our comic. I love our comic. A lot of my time is spent doing presentations and public speaking.
Yeah.
It's crazy that you too, like, that we're able to do all of these things in a day. And people say that all the time, like, how the heck do you do all this stuff? But yeah, you just don't sleep, like you said.
Yeah, you don't sleep. We keep going and we don't sleep. And I think too, you know, we've talked about this in the past, that a lot of it is choosing what you're putting that energy and that time towards, you know, and I've had this discussion, you know, you get into those, you know, those relationships where you kind of look at the person and you're like, hey, you're 30 minutes late. And in 30 minutes, I could have talked to an entire classroom of kids and inspired them. So guess what? You don't get 30 minutes ever again. And it's one of those things that I think we make that choice, you know, like I'm not intaking content or really being able to like watch shows like I do when I'm researching them and I'm into the science of, but like, you know, that's one of the things we don't always know about the latest and greatest, or we haven't seen it yet. What's on your home bench right now? Like, what are you working on right now?
That's a really good question. So there's a bunch of unfinished projects going on right now. And a lot of them were because they were side projects and at Moat, because I was I was in charge of this research program, I was coming up with new ideas all the time. And these new ideas weren't always funded. So I had to build this stuff and do this stuff in my free time. So I wrote a paper with NASA about aquaponic systems in space, basically using different shellfish to clean wastewater in a completely sustainable system. Huh. So I started the build on that to make it a completely sustainable system. And we built one at Mount Marine Laboratory, but then I left and COVID happened. And you know, I just never finished it. We published the paper, it's out, but we need to publish the second paper. And I need to finish this build. And the amazing part about this build is that if we're actually able to achieve a completely sustainable system, meaning that the only input is light on this. Okay. So you have wastewater, you go to the bathroom. Okay. And that water goes into first filter, just a mesh filter. And then it goes into basically a pretreatment tank. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it goes through that pretreatment because there's already bacteria in there because it's been working. That goes into our main tank where we have our shrimp, our mussels, and what else did we have in our snails? Okay. And so each section of that, the animals do different things. They uptake nutrients differently and different forms of nutrients. So by the end of the treatment train, we should have a pretty clean stream, an outflow stream. And then that will be put through a filter media like activated carbon or something like that. And then hopefully it'll be drinkable. Huh. After, we need another step, a UV step to kill any bacteria. And then drinkable, go to the bathroom. Hopefully this whole system with no inputs to feed the animals. The one thing that we are going to have in the tank that I didn't mention is algae. It goes through the algae first. And we need that algae in the tank because we need to oxygenate the tank. We can't have it open, obviously. And you know what water does in space. Water does some crazy stuff in space because we don't have gravity. Surface tension drives everything. So you can't just have like a tank of water just sitting. It won't do that. It will push towards the side. So we had to create a tank that will allow the animals and the water to exist in one place. And I had this idea to increase the surface area within that tank so we can have more animals and more exposure to the water. Just in case we do get some of that surface tension, if the water level drops or any evaporation for any reason. So I'm really excited about that.
I have so many questions. I do want you to like talk about whatever you're going to talk about next, but I have so many questions about this system. They're probably not the questions you're going to get from peer reviewers. Because I'm thinking about, you know, I grew up in the South and we would do, you know, we ate shrimp and we'd go shrimping and get crawdaddies and stuff like, and you have to devein them to take their poop out of them. But now you have your own waste in them. So how does that work? Like, they just eat it? Is it, do you have to worry that they also are poop flavored or pee flavored?
So two things. In this system, the solid waste is going to be screened out. Okay.
Okay. And then, okay, that helps. No poop. Okay.
And then the poop is going to be dehydrated and used as compost in the vegetation.
Okay.
Okay. So then that's another section that from this section will go to the lettuce and stuff like that, that they're growing on ISS. Okay. So here's the crazy part. There's no new water. The amount of water that is here today was here 1,000 years ago, will be here 1,000 years from now. So if you think about it, you might have drank the same drop of water a dinosaur drank.
Or peed out.
Right. That's kind of where I was going with it. We recycle our water. That's why it's so important that we're mindful of what we're putting into the water. You know, we think in our head that all the water in the world goes to a magical place that is automatically cleaned, but we actually have limitations with our water treatment. You know, we can only test for so many things. We're not testing for everything. And we're making up new chemicals that are entering the environment every single day that aren't being tested for. And we don't know if they're being removed. So it's really important that we start to think about our accumulating impact of all these crazy chemicals and endocrine disruptors that we're putting into the environment and our bodies, because eventually it comes back to affect our health. We can't really avoid it. And in this design, it's just showing you that it does it a lot faster right in front of your face.
Is there one project that if I could give you all the money in the world and remove all the red tape that you have right now sitting on a bench somewhere or in the back of your mind that you would build tomorrow?
Think about the problems that we have in our oceans with depleting fisheries. Our commercial fishing is completely devastating our oceans. and the ecological pyramid that we have. You know, it's like really decimating our ocean. So to be able to have an option to eliminate commercial fishing out in the oceans to where they can actually have these sustainable systems on land and them not cost too much money. I mean, maybe up front, but, you know, over time, if they're sustainable systems, not so much. I think that it would really, I mean, climate change isn't our only problem. You know, we're really making an impact on these oceans, and we're dependent on our oceans to survive. So that's really what I would do. But for fun, say I couldn't do that. My dream has always been to have this mobile lab. I respond to citizen calls of hazards, environmental or wildlife hazards, and then we build solutions to remedy them if we can, or find out what's going on. And I've always wanted a mobile lab to do that. So that's definitely what I would build. If I had unlimited money, like I would build the car up, the actual vehicle, mm-hmm. all the way up. That's definitely what I would do. I would make it electric. I would make it a hybrid, because if we're going to go in the middle of the Everglades or something, and as a Tesla owner, I know firsthand that you are not unlimited to your destinations. I think I would need a hybrid for this. If we're going to go to, you know, in the middle of the desert or, you know, the Everglades or whatever it is. And it needs to be something that's not so low to the ground too.
Mm-hmm. I think you also need the hauling capacities. There's something to be said about being either a hybrid or having a full engine to be able to haul things and be able to have that ability to pull things out. You know, if you've got a tree down in the way because you're doing storm relief, you need to be able to get it out of the way to get help in. So I think the hybrid's the right way to go for sure.
Yeah. Man, like, here's the thing. Then I start to think about this stuff and I get so excited. And then I realize that I don't have unlimited money. And then
let's get her unlimited money, guys. Come on. Or, you know, a bunch of us just get together and help her build this lab. Like, I'd be down.
I want everybody to be involved too. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not like, I'm always, I love teams. I like teams.
I think we've talked about this. I'm the same way. Like, I grew up building with my dad. We all built together on Mythbusters, and I enjoy collaborative processes. I mean, as an engineer, when you're doing it, it's project management, it's team management, and you're working with so many other people. So I think that team aspect is what really makes it enjoyable to me too. Like, I want to build in a group and I want to see other people bring their expertise and do what they can do. So I totally get that.
There's this nut house that I built. It's like a squirrel house.
With Gus, right? There's Gus. You got Gus? Yeah. I think I've seen the video. And if you guys haven't seen the video, you should definitely check it out, because it is an epic build. And it's hilarious to see these squirrels trying to get to the nuts. But please continue.
Yeah, it was like, it was a 7-step process on how to get squirrels away from your house, basically, and coexist with them. You know, we're in the 6th mass extinction, and neighbors were getting out BB guns because there's trees all over Gainesville, Florida, and there's squirrels all over. But that's just not, it's just not the way to go moving forward, because every single, you know, animal, unless it's invasive, you know, really plays a role in our ecosystem balance.
I like it, because you're, instead of just killing them, you're actually kind of rehabilitating them. You're like retraining them to find food on their own in this new area, and you're giving them a new, you know, a new environment to live in. So I think that's one of the things that I'm sure you deal with a lot, is like, as we have all this deforestation and we start building all these condominiums, and especially in places like Florida where they're building on what used to be swampland, you have a lot of these animals that they just get lost, and they think, you know, this used to be my home. This is where I used to migrate. Where do I go now? So I love, especially in your area, to like see a project where it's like, hey, like, these guys are not quite supposed to be here. Let's figure out where we can put them and still provide for them without just wiping them out, which sadly is some people's viewpoints.
Right. I mean, and developers will do what they can get away with, and they always build to the minimum regulations. And not only do we take away, you know, the homes of these animals, walls, and then they don't know where to go, and then we're mad when they're on the road. But not only that, we change the hydrology. So like you said, we're swampland. We build on top of swampland. We have to fill the land so that it's above the water table, so it doesn't get wet anymore. So where's that water going? And then when we have sea level rise on the coast, in addition to where's all this water going inland and all of this rainfall, and with climate change, the wet areas are going to get wetter and the dry areas are going to get drier. Mm-hmm. Like we're really, flood insurance is going to be pretty darn expensive in Florida coming up soon. Like,
yeah. Eastern North Carolina is the same way. Like I grew up in this really small town that's near water. And I remember when I was younger, you know, we just knew that when the hurricanes came through, the water was going to breach and come up and going to be like up to our steps. And so it's one of those things that, like, as time has gone on, the water levels have just gotten higher and higher when the hurricanes and floods come through.
And that's why it's so important to, for these kids and for actually everybody to start thinking in a building sense and innovation and design, because not only do we have to fix the problems that we've caused, but also we have to get ahead of the game, because now we've put things into play that even if we stop all of this stuff, you know, we still are going to have these impacts. And thinking in the way of innovation for the future, whether it's renewable energy or sustainable design or water treatment technologies or desalination or air scrubbers to for air pollution. And I mean, whatever it is, it's going to take somebody thinking outside the box and taking risks with innovation. And when you have in your brain, like if you've wired your brain to actually build and create things, that innovation comes a lot easier, because you can see from A to Z, like how to go from that idea to a finished product. And I think it's really important that people realize the power that they have just, you know, with their own two hands and the right tools, obviously.
I love that, that whole sentiment, because I think as engineers, we aren't taught the answer to every problem. We instead are taught how to be able to work through a problem, how to critically think, how to problem solve, how to design things, how to build things. And I think that that's something that as a builder and a maker, you also learn those skills. Speaking of tools, so you and I travel all over the world, right? Like doing these speaking events and all of that. And I think we've commiserated in the fact that there's always something that you forget is in your actual bag and TSA gets to keep it.
Oh my God. Like literally there's been at least 10 multi-tools. Yeah. Like without fail, I forget a multi-tool or a knife in my backpack when I'm going through security. Okay. Well, I got in trouble once that I had bullets and I had a mugshot and everything.
That was after the search, right? Because we had the handgun episode, and I know Hackett gave me some bullet casings to keep, which I shipped back a lot of my stuff. So I actually have mine still.
I got through TSA like literally like so many times without them doing anything. It wasn't until a year later. And I was like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot about those. Crazy.
That is crazy. You know what? It's funny too, that you say like the things that you get back and forth with TSA without them noticing. So when I was doing Mythbusters Junior, I was having to fly all the time to do my Comic-Con conventions on weekends, but I would always take my design book with me. And, you know, I get the really thick, thin graph paper books. And I had this habit of wanting to reuse razor blade. And so what I would do when I would be using them to scrape things or cut things, but not actually using them in a utility knife, is I would tape them into the back of my design book. Cause then I would always know, okay, if I need a blade and I'm in the field, I have one. Like I don't have to try to figure out where a knife is. So I like literally opened up my book one day and realized that they were there and was like sitting there doodling. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, I just flew to New York with these in my carry-on. What? Like, and it wasn't just one or two, like, cause I'm really bad about like remembering where I put my book. So I had like 10 blades just taped in to my book and got through TSA multiple times, got home, got back with it. I mean, I realized at that point that I had flown to San Diego, North Carolina, and New York with these, going through LAX as well as FSO. And it's kind of one of those things. I mean, we learned in covert entry training, right? That it's kind of that masquerade of TSA, you know, they're not really looking. And I definitely think that was proven.
Yeah. Yeah, until it's not, and they take you into a room and start taking your picture.
Yeah, which you don't want.
No, it was really embarrassing, but at the same time, it was so funny.
Did you just nonchalantly be like, oh, I got, you know, it was from set of Mythbusters.
People over with that. For sure. They weren't mean to me.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean.
But getting all those multi-tools taken from me, that was a pain in the butt, man. Hmm. Like that was, some of them were really expensive, like super nice multi-tools.
So we've kind of talked about like what tools they've taken. So what's a tool that you think that everyone should have in their shop?
You know, I used to say an arc grinder, and then I got one and I ended up never using it. I just like using arc grinders, as it turns out. But, you know, like, I don't know what I would have done without my miter saw and table saw when I was building the nut house. I tried to do like a hand circular saw with a guide, and it's just, it was so much more difficult than doing the miter saw and table saw. But when it comes to something that you absolutely need, I mean, how boring is this? But like drill, obviously. But, you know, I used to say my Dremel. And the reason for that is just the versatility of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're doing bigger projects, that's when, you know, you kind of run into issues. But you can cut things, you can sand things, you can drill if you wanted to. Like the Dremel can do a lot of things. I think I would put that's the one that I would choose.
I actually love that you bring the Dremel up, because on this show, we talk to not only traditional makers, but also a lot of cosplay makers. And you actually used your Dremel to do your Rey cosplay, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. That's really funny. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, I think I have next to my spear is here. Maybe it was good that I was in here, not my workshop. So yeah, this was a shower curtain and some kids' toys and a belt. But yeah, so it looked pretty cool, you know.
Yeah, it looked amazing. You did a great job with it. And I thought it was really cool because you were also integrating in upcycling and reuse of materials, which is a really big thing in both the maker and cosplay communities. So
yeah, it was by far my most popular video, probably because I did it all in a Leia costume.
That helps.
I give 100% credit to the bikini.
Yeah, the slave Leia, that seems to always bring it's kind of like your milkshake, right? The boys to the yard.
I was gonna say that. Yep, the slave Leia brings all the boys to the yard for sure.
The force is strong with this one.
Right.
That's amazing. So let's swap it up. Like, so the sky's the limit. What would be a cosplay character that you would love to do? Nothing's in the way. If there's a specialty you don't have, like foam or metal or anything like that, chainmail, other people can do it for you. Like, what's a cosplay you would love to like rock?
Well, if you can do anything, why not do Iron Man? And actually, like, you know, like that's if you're going to do something, that one thing, I mean, have it be that you're like the legit superhero. Like that's it. He was a guy and he made it, like that's something that's actually doable.
Mm-hmm. You know me, when I go to these outreach events, I always do my superhero science, and I like kids asking whatever they want with regards superheroes and powers. And what I love is they're always like, you know, what are the ways to become a superhero? And so I talk to them like about, well, you could have some kind of nuclear or genetic alteration happen. And I talk about like Spider-Man and I talk about Captain Marvel. And then I'm like, or you could just be born that way, like Superman. I was like, or you could become a scientist or engineer like Tony Stark or like Batman. You know, you could start developing your own tech. And they get so excited because they're like, wait, I could actually do that. And you're like, yeah, you could actually do that. So I think it's really neat. I mean, that suit too. Wow. Like just the way that it actually like comes together, the way that it like comes off as a shell, all of the different like integrations with regards to other tech.
Of course, to make the Black Panther suit, the high tech that Black Panther suit.
The nanoparticles and all the beads. Yeah.
Right. It's just, I don't think we're there yet.
No. But But what I love, and this is something that, you know, I do these science of, like, science of Star Wars and science of Aquaman and all these things. And I talk a lot about, like, the existing tech that we have that's comparable, like, for Captain Marvel. Like, we have those energy blasters that we take asteroids out with, right? But I think the really phenomenal thing that Black Panther did was it gave us the next place to go. Because if you think about our tech was that for that generation, like that's why we have our iPhones and we have our smartwatches and we have everything that we have because of Dick Tracy as a comic, as because of Star Trek as a show. But there hasn't been a lot of forward pushing things till Black Panther, getting to see all of this new tech, which obviously exists in the comics too, but like bringing it to a main stage where everyone's watching and they're all getting excited about it. I cannot wait to see what that inspires next. Like, I can't wait to see that tech come to life and be brought together, you know? Okay, so each year I try to take on at least one new skill that I want to learn. The year before, I learned how to forge Damascus steel with Barefoot Forge. What is a skill that you have in your bucket list this year to learn?
For me, every year, I'm going to say something really girly, but
that's okay, good. So, that's what this show's for. We like girly.
So growing up, I didn't really wear makeup. I didn't wear makeup through my 20s. Like, I just didn't wear much makeup. So every year I try to do something to, you know, like enhance things, you know? So like I started wearing mascara one year, and then another year, you know, I got highlights. Another year I parted my hair differently. And I really don't wear eyeshadow much, but then I got blue contacts this year, which was really weird. This sounds really stupid right now.
No, keep going. No, I think self-improvement, you know, is hand in hand with what, you know, we are. Like, we don't just make aesthetically pleasing things. We also, as women, we want to be aesthetically pleasing, you know. Some of us more than others. Like I also didn't learn how to do makeup until college. And, you know, I just learned a lot more 2 years ago. I had a roommate in Hollywood that taught me so much.
You know, it sounds girly and it sounds, you know, superficial and all that. But if you look at the animal kingdom, okay, so you have mallard ducks, you know, the male ducks, female ducks, the male ducks are all colorful. The female ducks aren't. The male ducks have this like they have this power. They have this, you know, like they go and they just, you know, mate with all these females and they just,
they're rapey. We've talked about this, rapey ducks.
Right. So in humans, and maybe a lot of people wouldn't agree with this, but as we become adults, the features on a female are not as defined as those on a male. So the reason why, like, I'm okay with makeup as an adult, not little kids, that freaks me out.
Yes. I grew up in the debutante South, the same as you. It freaks me out as well.
It's almost like an independence thing, like a power thing. Like, we're taking over our gender, you know, and like, really, like, we're just like, we don't. No, we're the ones. You can come in and try to get me, but we're not doing that duck thing, no. You know? Like, I know that sounds ridiculous, but at the same time, like, you know, I think that it took a long time for women to realize that they weren't wearing makeup for the men. They were wearing it for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things that, like, I actually talk to little girls all the time about how you can actually be a formulations engineer and you can make makeup, you can make scents. I used to consult with Aveda and like work on their packaging development. And I got to take a tour and like learn all about just the different smells and how they have to be sustainable and how they get their scents, you know, everything that goes into like crossbreeding the perfect rose for a rose smell. So there is so much science and so much design. One of the creepiest things to me is I used to work in fluorination and they use it on mascara because a lot of the volatiles in mascara basically want to travel out of the actual casings. And so if you don't want caked up mascara, you need to be able to keep the xylols and stuff in. And so when I was researching it and really getting into the field at first, I loved deep diving patents and I'm looking into all these patents. And it turns out that mascara wands used to be predominantly metal. Most of the time now they're like fibers or they're polymers, but women back in the day who wanted to be able to look beautiful would be putting this on. And before, you know, testing and cosmetic agencies that keep things safe came into play, women were going blind because they were getting hairline scratches. Cause you know, I mean, I get mascara in my eyeball all the time cause I'm still new to it, but they would get hairline scratches on their eye and then they would get infected and they would cause blindness in these women because of the stuff that was in the formulation. So I'm like, look, we need engineers and scientists in these fields so that that doesn't happen anymore. We also need regulation. Regulation is important. It's one of those things that I think makeup design is not something that people should shy away from. You know, I worked with this really great organization that they wanted to set up these STEM maker workshops for girls. Specifically, and they were having pretty good feedback and pretty good retention of like girls that were really into building, but they weren't being able to retain the girly girls. And I'm like, right. Dude, just start, you know, do wood turning for blush brush holders.
Right.
Do wood, like different builds for, you know, a rack for nail polishes. Like there's a way to get all the girls excited about the building, you know? So I'm totally good with you talking about makeup. I love it.
And since you said that, you know, the one thing that I kind of wanted to do for this year is create my own makeup from earth products, from different sand and dirts and colors from different flowers. It's not to create a product that's like to sell. That's when we start getting unsustainable. It's to show people that they don't have to go to the store, buy something with plastic or glass and packaging to be able to wear makeup.
Mm-hmm.
It's because there's all these natural colors all over, especially here in Florida.
That would be really cool. You know, I definitely want to see that if you do it. I think I'd go out and paint my face. I don't know that we have as many plants that you should rub on your face in California. It's mostly succulents and very spiky cacti, but maybe there's
got to be a color you can extract.
There's got to be something, you know?
Yeah.
So we talked about what you would cosplay next, but if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Teleportation.
That's what I always choose too. Okay, I want to know why teleportation for you?
At any moment, I want to be in three different places. Like, wouldn't it be cool if I was there right now? I could be
there.
That
would be amazing. I'm the exact same way. Teleportation, because I feel like I need to be in 100 different places at once. So like if I didn't have to sit on a plane or sit on a train or sit in LA traffic for an hour and a half to go 5 miles, it would be nice to have that time back to be able to dedicate to something else. So, okay. So one of the things that we were just talking about was kind of the girly side of life. So as a female engineer that is on television, do you feel like you have a responsibility when you're in those roles to ensure that you're representing it in a certain way or you're behaving in a certain way, like for young girls that might be watching or even young boys?
Kids need better role models on TV. Mythbusters wasn't what I wanted to do. I want to go and solve the world's problems, like environmentally blowing stuff up for fun wasn't really what I was looking for, but I did it because my little cousin came over. She's 11 years old and just idolizing Kim Kardashian. And I was like, look at, and then I was like, oh my gosh, I can't think of one female for her to follow on Instagram. I mean, now it's different. I can name a bunch of them, but you know, 6 years ago, I couldn't. That's when I created Inspector Planet and I made my first video. And then, you know, when Mythbusters came, I just couldn't say no. I'd worked with Discovery on two other projects that didn't work out. And I was like, well, apparently this isn't as easy as I thought. Even though they called me the day after I put the video out, I was like, oh, this TV stuff is easy. No, it's not. And in fact, if anybody is listening right now, and if you think that, you know, you really want to do TV, let me tell you, you don't. It's not what you think it is. It's not what you have to do it for the right reasons. Like the only reason why I continue to do it is because I feel like my perspective on environment and science is unique. And I feel like these kids need to see that in action. And I mean, besides that, like it is not like it doesn't make you happy, you know, like don't think that TV will make you happy. you know, and neither will science actually lose 99% of the time, but at least with science, that 1% of the time that it actually does work, you're changing the world. You have the possibilities, the potential to change the world.
There's going to be a lot of opportunities that come in life, like regardless of what industry you're in, what role you're in, kids, people, humans know that it's not just about the opportunity. It's about the lost opportunities too. So while a specific show may give you exposure to elevate your platform to be able to, you know, normalize women in a certain situation, there's also that balance of like, what if it's not fully in line with your brand, if it's not fully in line with what you do, what are you potentially missing out on during that time? So for instance, like I was doing wardrobe design almost full time when I was first consulting and engineering, because I had to build up my client base. And I was also doing acting. And when I transitioned over and started with Mythbusters, I had to really make a choice, because when you do wardrobe design, you're locked for like 3 to 6 months, depending on the feature, maybe even longer sometimes. And I remember when I was on Junior, I had 2 different dream shows come and want me as a wardrobe designer. And one of them was Westworld, which I've done Science of Westworld at every single major con. So I was dying inside. But at the end of the day, like, even though that opportunity was amazing, I knew what was more important for me was normalizing women in a shop, being a host in science content. So I had to kind of be like, okay, that'd be really fun, but this is where I'm supposed to be. And I think weighing that is what's really important, because especially when, you know, like us, we have a lot of producers, they bring us a lot of stuff, but just because it's going to make them money and you're going to get some short-term money, which by the way, is not a lot in reality television or maker television or science television. You have to love what you're doing, because you're not going to make the money that, like, you know, the big stars do. You got to make sure that you're not sacrificing a part of you that matters, not giving up an opportunity that matters more, because, you know, that space that you're filling with that show that you really don't want to do, there could have been an opportunity in that to go out and maybe talk to more students or build your mobile lab or things like that. So,
yeah. I mean, my advice is never to give up your day job. If you want to do something on TV, do in real life, like just be authentic. And then on top of it, you know, to complement what you were saying about what you give up, you're also giving up some of your privacy. You're also putting yourself in situations. I mean, you know, you can get 20 compliments from a boss and 1 criticism. And that's all you focus on that one is that one criticism. When you put yourself in the public eye, and especially with some of the stuff that I do that's controversial, you know, even though it shouldn't be because it's just facts. But anyway, but you're putting yourself in a situation where people are going to target you if they mm-hmm. can't disprove your facts.
But no, you're exactly right. Like you become the target for the assault. And we all know that the comment section is nowhere to live, and that trolling and bullying online is 100% a normality, which should change, but is what it is.
You don't take down those Instagram pages that are made about you.
No. And that's a heartbreaking part of it. And I think at the end of the day, as long as you're true to who you are and what your passion and what the thing you want to do in life is, you can withstand that and have resilience to that. But if you're sacrificing who you are just to make money, or just because you think that next show will be the happiness, it's never going to happen. So you're exactly right. Like, keep your day job. If it wasn't for engineering, I would not be able to pay bills in LA. And, you know, stay true to who you are. Like,
and your efforts should go to forwarding humanity.
Yes. And I think that is literally kind of the theme of what we've been talking about today is how to make the world a better place, whether it's aesthetically or functionally or, you know, biologically. I think that we've really been able to explore that today. So thank you, Tracy. This has been amazing.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. And I will definitely have you back. You know, you're kind of stuck with me because we have a conference together. That's it for Tinkering Bells. This episode is assembled and ready for delivery. I want to thank you for choosing Tinkering Bells as your user's manual for all things maker on a bi-weekly basis. If you want to continue to hear more, don't forget to rate and review the show on your podcasting app of choice, as well as sharing it with your friends. Can't find us? Let me know at tinkeringbellsco@gmail.com. I look forward to seeing you next week. Until then, don't forget to keep making.